We're talking private shares and venture capital with Christian Manafo, Chief Investment Officer at Liberty Street Advisors. Welcome to The Navigator. This is The Navigator, where we talk about all-weather active investing and plotting a course to financial success with the help of closed-end funds. The Navigator is brought to you by the Active Investment Company Alliance, a unique industry organization that represents all facets of the closed-end fund industry, from users and investors to fund sponsors and creators. If you're looking for excellence beyond indexing, The Navigator will point you in the right direction. And today, we are looking at developments in the private markets with Christian Manafo, Chief Investment Officer at Liberty Street Advisors, which runs the Private Shares Fund, which is a continuously offered closed-end interval fund that trades under ticker symbol PRIV, as in private, PRIVX. Learn more about the fund at privatesharesfund.com. And to learn more about interval funds, business development companies, and closed-end funds generally, go to AICAlliance.org, the website for the Active Investment Company Alliance. Christian Manafo, welcome back to The Navigator.
Thanks, Chuck. Great to be with you again.
Let's start with the landscape, because we can all see what the market is doing, what is happening with the various indexes, but the landscape for the private market, that's a little tougher for us to see. So right now, as we're watching a market that has been narrow and frothy and kind of directionless, what are you seeing on the private markets?
To kick things off, I would say that we are starting to identify a number of signals which lead us to believe that overall sentiment is improving for private markets, but I'll come back to that. I think it's safe to say that the private market in general has continued to face a challenging landscape through the first half of 2023. You know, you can observe growth rates, I think, having slowed in many situations. Capital deployment rates are contracting. Valuations remain compressed. Exit activities muted. So there's a number of examples to point to which would lead one to believe that the private market environment has been challenging. But we also must not forget this is all very standard for this stage in this cyclical rotation. To your point, Chuck, on public markets, while public and private markets are not directly correlated, there is an overlap in terms of sentiment and confidence. And when you look at private markets, which typically have less transparency, lower liquidity, more difficult access to information, you know, the market tends to shy away from those types of opportunities in these types of markets due to a perceived increase in risk. And that's unfortunately not a great tack to take as we look historically for investor behavior. The perceived higher risks in challenging environments often lead to very attractive opportunities and outperformance in subsequent years. So, you know, when you least think it's attractive for capital deployment, that tends to be the best time for capital deployment. And I would just add one more thing to that. You know, the year-to-date rally across many of the public indices has been a bit misleading, given it's primarily driven by a fairly small subset of the overall market, which is largely comprised of companies with the largest market caps. So for example, if you look at the top seven mega cap companies, they now make up more than 50%, 50, of the entire NASDAQ 100 and roughly 30% of the S&P 500. So there's definitely a bit of skewing there. And let's not forget those indices were down, you know, NASDAQ 30%, S&P more than 20%, Russell 20% last year, while the private markets, you know, remained fairly stable. So I think you need to take everything into context. There's absolutely been an exciting rally in public markets. Private markets tend to behave differently. They never go up as fast or go down as fast. It's a more stable progression. So overall, it's definitely been a challenging environment, but we are seeing signs for improvement.
Private companies are no more immune to any of the economic conditions than anybody else. You know, when you start talking about supply chain issues, they affect everybody, or inflation and interest rates affect everybody. So let's look at the management side. Is management of private companies doing anything different than management we would expect from public companies to navigate in these conditions? Do they have certain benefits from being private that help them be better positioned for these times?
The first response I would say is not all management teams are created equally, right, in the public and the private markets. And so, you know, you have companies in both public and private markets who were taking proactive measures to brace themselves 18, 24 months ago for what they foresaw as a higher probability of a more challenging landscape, while others kind of kept their feet on the pedal. And so, you know, one, I think we have to acknowledge that, you know, not all companies are the same in terms of their operational capabilities and excellence. What we're seeing from the better capitalized and the better managed companies in the private markets is there's absolutely continuing to be more discipline in terms of how the companies are operating, are spending, are executing. A lot of companies have trimmed the fat, if you will, trying to right size their businesses. They're lowering their burn rates, right, to basically get them to profitability more quickly if they're not already profitable. You still have a lot of companies sitting on tremendous cash balances, given how much money was raised over the past few years. But you have other companies that are less fortunate, right? And they have to be much more efficient with how they're managing capital. So I think management overall for the better managed companies are being very thoughtful in terms of execution. They're not trying to be all things to all people. It's a bit of back to basics, focusing on your core competencies, staying in your lane, kind of doubling down where you're seeing progress and good results. Then you have the other side of the equation where you have some groups that unfortunately just continue to struggle with accepting the reality of the environment that we're in. And those are companies that I referred to, I think the last time we spoke several months ago, that I would put into this kind of bifurcation where you have higher performing, better managed companies that are for the most part plowing forward, albeit not without challenges. It's like you said, whether you're public or private, there are macro issues you have to face. But you have other companies that just haven't really been able to get things assembled in a more organized manner. And those companies are facing significant headwinds as they run out of capital. So it's a bit of a bifurcation.
Generally, let's get your market outlook and then help us frame an expectation, because every investor looks long-term and says, oh, the stock market's going to deliver 10% on average a year. But in the conditions that we've got and whatever you're going to tell me you see as your market outlook, what's your expectation, or what's a fair expectation of what private equity and venture capital can deliver in these conditions?
And you know, one other question you raised, which I didn't address, is, you know, are there benefits to executing as a private company versus a public company? And you know, a lot of these types of conversations that we're having absolutely further validate why companies continue staying private longer. You know, making changes to your headcount, right? Shutting down divisions, et cetera. Those are much harder decisions to make as a publicly traded company. If you perhaps miss your growth estimates or your earnings, et cetera, you have a lot more insulation when you're making those types of adjustments in the private market, which is, I think, another reason, again, why companies continue staying private longer. So there absolutely are benefits. In terms of the sentiment, look, I think there's a few things I'd point out that we've been tracking that we think are signals of an improving condition. While the capital deployment rates, as I noted, have remained muted, we are seeing deal count. So the number of companies raising capital and the amounts of those that are closing picking up. So, you know, that leads us to believe that for venture-backed growth-oriented companies, we're seeing an increased demand, which is a positive signal. And let's not forget, there's still $200 to $300 billion of unfunded capital commitments in this ecosystem. So there's a lot of money here left to protect the ecosystem. That number is roughly double where it was 5 years ago. We also think there's a bottoming out happening in secondaries. And again, secondaries for your audience refers to the purchasing of private assets, which could be in the form of buying fund interests from existing investors in private equity-oriented funds, or buying private company securities directly from shareholders in those companies. We focus on the latter. And while the discounts basically over the past 12 months have been in the 50% range relative to last round, so very attractive, we are actually seeing a bottoming out from various data providers and also the own conversations we're having internally. So there seems to be some pushback, which is a signal that, you know, the sellers are getting more optimistic. We also see something, Chuck, that we call in the market rights of first refusal. This is a provision where a company or an existing shareholder in a company may have a right to prevent an existing buyer to buy into that company. By having that right, they could basically purchase that instead of a new buyer. It's called the right of first refusal provision. It basically dictates how securities and secondaries can be facilitated in a company's capital structure. When you see companies and existing shareholders executing those provisions, it's typically a signal that they feel the companies are undervalued and that they are taking a bullish stance by putting more capital to work. And we're actually seeing the execution of those rights of first refusal increase. And then lastly, I would just say that we're seeing a pickup in M&A and IPO activity. The levels are still very muted relative to what we saw, you know, several years ago, but we're absolutely seeing a pickup. And we've got more than 200 venture-backed companies waiting to go public, which is the highest levels we've seen in two decades. And the conversations we're having with bankers, with companies, co-investors, there's a view that we're likely to see a pickup in late 2023 and certainly next year.
Christian, great stuff. I want to have you back so that we can see what's happening as those venture companies come to market and we see if that pickup occurs in the context of everything else that's going on the market. I'm looking forward to that conversation already, but thanks for this one today.
Thank you, Chuck. Yeah, we're certainly not out of the woods and anything can happen in today's macro and geopolitical landscape, but we are definitely getting more optimistic about sentiment. So I look forward to following up with you in the coming months.
The Navigator is a joint production of the Active Investment Company Alliance and Money Life with Chuck Jaffe. And yep, that's me. And you can check out my hour-long weekday show on your favorite podcast app or by going to moneylifeshow.com. To learn more about interval funds, closed-end funds, and business development companies, go to AICAlliance.org, the website for the Active Investment Company Alliance, on Facebook and LinkedIn at AIC Alliance. Thanks to my guest, Christian Manafo, Chief Investment Officer at Liberty Street Advisors, which runs the Private Shares Fund, a continuously offered closed-end interval fund under ticker symbol PRIVX. Learn more about the fund at privatesharesfund.com. The Navigator Podcast is new every Friday, and we'll be back next week with something new. Follow along on your favorite podcast app to make sure you don't miss a thing. And until next week, happy investing, everybody.